All right, so my name is Ben Briard. I'm a Red Hatter. I've been at Red Hat for 8 years now, and I've spent the past 3 years really focusing in at kind of all of the technology, in the layers and in the space that we're going to talk about today, going from everything on the systemd side to container runtimes, what we do for image content, how we produce them, keep everything fresh in these things, and everything we've done on the atomic host side, and then looking forward, kind of where we're going on the CoreOS side. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. And I thought let's see, my clicker doesn't seem to work. Excuse me while I switch this. Okay, so I thought today we'd really focus in on the why. So, like, why are we making some changes here? What are we doing this for? Some of my peers have given other talks on this subject that I think kind of cover more of the how and the what. So Benjamin Gilbert and Dusty May gave a really good talk at Flock on this. If you guys want to learn more in this space, that's a really good one to go look. And then Colin Walters gave another one at Flock, or no, sorry, DevConf US, that I think was probably more on the how side. And so these are really good talks, and these guys are all brilliant. So, I recommend those. But today I want to talk about, like, the why. And every time I talk, I like to tell bad jokes, so I apologize. But we're gonna start with that now. So we got a new logo, which is not new, but the colors are slightly tweaked to align with Fedora. And so I was thinking about logos, right? I always loved the CoreOS logo. It's perfect. Even the name is perfect. So I'm really, really glad that. These things are still in play because they're very, very symbolic about kind of what we're doing in the effort. But something Leonard and I have talked about is we need a real logo for systemd. And you guys know we talk about systemd this whole conference, right? Because this kind of grew out of systemdconf. And I like systemd a lot. But so there's actually services out there that will generate logos. Have you guys seen this? So these logo generators, so if you just type in a name, it'll go scour the internet, and then based on what it finds on the internet, it'll come back and give you a graphical representation of what you want to do a logo for. And so I thought, oh, well, this is perfect. So let's see, what would the internet say about systemd for a logo? Do you guys want to see this? No, nobody. Okay, a couple of people want to see. So it's the internet can be a cruel place, but this was what came back. So we're not going to use this logo. Okay, this is not good at all. Anyway, but I thought that was pretty funny. Okay, so going into what we want to talk about is the, kind of what we're doing with CoreOS in the space and why. So last time I was in Europe, we had probably a 3-4 day kind of planning team meeting, figuring out kind of next steps for us, what we're doing and stuff. And I got back on the plane to fly home, and over the Atlantic, I was on the satellite internet, and I got a ping from my boss that, hey, guess what? CoreOS is coming to Red Hat. And I thought, well, okay, this is super exciting, right? Because, the people are brilliant. The technology is really, really good. I thought, but on this plane, I need a really big trash can to just, throw away, all my plans, right? Because everything's just out the window right now. So I was a little bit nervous flying back out here, fearing another ping like that, but that has not happened. One of the reasons I like Red Hat so much is because there aren't a lot of companies out there that, when they do an acquisition, they aggressively open source any proprietary IP, and I think that's really, really unique and something I really like about Red Hat. And so primarily everything at CoreOS was open except a couple pieces for Quay, which those are being open source right now, so that's really cool and something I really admire about the company. But when we look at the technology there, it's like really, really compatible, and kind of a lot of the things that we were doing at Red Hat, CoreOS was also doing a really good job of kind of forwarding that mission. And so you guys know Tectonic is like the Kubernetes platform that CoreOS has, and OpenShift is the one that Red Hat has. And the two align quite well. Tectonic historically has a stronger story on the operational side about how you instantiate the cluster, and it's kind of more of a self-driving model, and the whole theme of automated operations play very strongly there. OpenShift, I don't really want to talk too much about products today, but the OpenShift side, it's a like our strength was always on like onboarding applications and that flow to just getting workloads on the clusters. One of the problems we've had in the cloud space is companies go through these initiatives and they end up with this empty cluster problem. And across our industry, there's stats of, I want to say it's like 70% of IT projects tend to fail. So there's several conclusions we can draw from that. One is we may be solving the problems the wrong way, or two, we're all not very good at our jobs, but think of it what you will, but that's one reason why I think we've seen success in the space is because that ease of onboarding applications. So long story short, putting those two together is actually a pretty powerful value proposition and what we're working on. So CoreOS is probably best known for is CoreOS, which is later renamed Container Linux. When we look at this concept that they pioneered of stripping down the OS to just a few hundred packages, like the bare essentials you need to containerize applications, it's ultimately been incredibly successful. And the things that people like about it are the fact that it's a basically just this minimal footprint. It's just the bare essentials you need. Not a lot of extra stuff. So what you would traditionally get in a distribution like a Fedora, say, we really strip away, anything that's not essential. And so that helps from like a security perspective. But when you're trying to ship the latest software, the less you have to compile and build in that stack to version, the more possible that becomes. And then of course, the fact that it's the OS is basically transparent under the seam, and so like the update cadence and the care and feeding that sysadmins give to Container Linux, we like most of that is automated where possible, primarily through the auto updates model. And so the thinking is that the way containers work for Docker, that type of model, the OCI model, is that everything that we ship for the application is bundled and isolated there and is effectively isolated from the operating system. So if we decoupled these two things, the result of that is we can then automate and rev the OS without impacting the application. I mean, this makes sense, right? We need to get away from the Patch Tuesday problem of coming in once a month and figuring out what's broken. And containers have gone a long way to further that. Just looking at the adoption, we're seeing the results of that. So at the summit, Brandon Phillips and I kind of did a little bit of a retrospective on kind of what worked and what didn't work, looking back from at the Container Linux side and the Atomic side. I don't really want to rehash that whole talk, but for context, I do want to hit on a couple points. Most of these were specific to Brandon's side. And so the goal is, if you think of the goal as shipping new components, so a new kernel, once that's ready to go and upstream cuts a release, or when systemd cuts a release, for example, Container Linux did a really good job getting those versioning, building, testing, and then shipping this one unit, right? And kind of some assumptions that it would actually become this pretty clear cut architecture and these clear layers of separation here. So, the kernel, systemd is our service manager and system manager right above that, and that these things always work nice together, and then, Docker works nice with systemd, and then, of course, the kubelet will then control Docker effectively. Kubelet does a lot more than just talk to the Docker APIs, right? It's a much much broader. It's almost like a system manager now of its own right, where it does quite a bit in, you know, proc and everything else on the system. So Brandon's take on this was that most of these assumptions did not hold. The kernel was really the primary one where, from a compatibility perspective, does like a really, really good job of carrying workloads forward. So again, this is it's interesting when you start to think about it from the layered cake model. The other thing is, from a Kubernetes perspective, by the way, I'm sure most of you guys know Red Hat's like heavily invested in Kubernetes. This is a huge strategic big deal for us, and we put a lot of resources into this. Basically, updates for container Linux are done centrally, right? And you have this kind of monolithic update model where which channel you're on determines the update that you're effectively subscribed to. But the cluster version doesn't control or push updates down, and so you can end up in a state where nodes can be at various versions of the operating system, and you don't have basically like a top-down versioning from this part. And they got really, really close to this with Tectonic, and we're on the path, I would say. But this is something we think we can actually turn a couple knobs and actually have the cluster drive the OS version, which is powerful from a consistency state. I talked to one of the big cable companies in North America just a few weeks ago, and their issue right now is when some of the nodes come back up from reboots, they actually don't know what version of CL they're gonna reboot into, and so they there's a bit of an uncertainty for them, and they have a couple thousand systems running right now. So this is like one small thing that I think we can make a big impact on for this use case. The other big thing is I hate this picture, by the way, so I just kind of put it up to make a point. The container ecosystem and everything from, this is from CNCF, is changed a lot over the past 5 years. I think a lot of us, when we see stuff like this, it's like, oh my God, this is a good looking sushi menu, and I want, give me one of those, one of these, take three of those. And it's all gonna work together. Experience tells me that's many cases not true, I think when the container kind of revolution kicked off, right, Docker really did a phenomenal job helping people understand the concepts and seeing the value of this, but we've seen like proliferation at many different levels. So there's far more container runtimes. You guys know, it's kind of the Greek tragedy of open source is there's like 500 ways to do everything. We probably have 40 different ways to run containers in Linux, maybe more. But we've got more, and they're becoming highly specialized in the runtime space. So anything from, you know, technologies like Scone or whatever that they use some of the CPU privilege write spaces and stuff. You've got this explosion of projects in this space, and everybody's trying to build these distributed systems that actually solve real problems. And it's pretty easy to pick and choose and build a cluster, but what's incredibly difficult is versioning and lifecycling so many different disparate projects that all fit together. It's incredibly difficult, and it's a trap that I think a lot of us fall into, that I can do this, not should I do this. Where this, and I'll give you another good example of this, is a different telco in North America. They have a huge Kubernetes system, and a lot of their nodes, the file systems were flipping to read-only, just like randomly throughout the whole thing. And you know, they call us and say, Red Hat, your file systems suck. And I said, well, no, they don't suck. They work for a lot of people, actually. and so we traced it down to the actual problem was a bug in Prometheus, actually, for them. And because of the endpoint metrics, which is like you would never, ever, Like, why would you ever think something that reads in points and collects metrics would result in that? I surely never would have. But it's interesting how interconnected all these pieces are. And so that was just one thing. And again, that bug has been fixed upstream. I think one of the biggest traps we run into here is actually in the logging side of the way containers just spew everything to standard out, and the bottleneck that creates at scale is a really challenging way. So I think like a reality is, yes, containers of course help from the OS and the application side, but then when we look at larger distributed systems, these layers are so much like deeper and tightly coupled than we'd like to admit, right? We think they're just all APIs that are going to talk and everything's good, but I'm not convinced that's the case. Maybe I'm wrong, but experience says otherwise. Okay, so that's a little bit of context. So everything in this really, really successful. But there are a few knobs that we can turn that we think we can make things better at just the OS level itself. At Red Hat, you know, again, we have like a product path, and I don't really want to talk too much about that, but what we're doing in that sense is basically taking the best of both Atomic Host and Container Linux, and really are such a big fan of just the user experience of everything from Container Linux, meaning just the way it's built, the mission, the vision, everything that, you know, in reality, in a Kubernetes environment, you really should not have to SSH into a node, and that's a concept that we really want to bring forward. And then, of course, from the Atomic side is actually you know, a lot of the Linux stuff that we do at Red Hat and how the host is actually composed. So there was a sarcastic tweet a while back I wanted to find, but I could not find. Finding old tweets is tough, but there was one that said something like, oh God, RPMOS tree, that's really what CoreOS needs to get better, right? I couldn't remember who made that crack, but anyway, RPMOS tree, I on one hand I'm sympathetic to that, but it is quite good technology, and we can put out spins really, really rapidly in Kubernetes and ship updates as container images, which is really appealing, because when you look at mirroring content for like disconnected environments and so forth, container images are a really, really powerful vehicle for that, because you're not having to grab yet another content type, not another repo to set up. Everybody pretty much already has some type of registry. So specifically, we are making a few changes on the product side. Some of these are different on the Fedora side, which we'll talk about in a minute. But basically, going back to the linearizing updates from the Kubernetes cluster perspective and really driving that down, one of the other realizations from the upstream side is that containerizing the kubelet probably creates as many problems as it solves. So whether you're running the kubelet as a container or in the OS compose, you're going to pay for that one way or another. And containerizing that is actually has become problematic in some ways. Okay, I got to speed up. Anyway. Containerizing it works great for small POCs. There are a lot of code paths, though, that never really get tested upstream, especially in the storage space. So we're making the conscious decision to move that into the host. And then again, on the product side, this is perfectly versioned for Kubernetes, so we'll be driving that stack down. It's a little bit different, though, on the Fedora side, because again, that's all from like the kube OpenShift model. On Fedora CoreOS, we really want to be less opinionated. We want to find that right balance between being opinionated and just like general purpose operating system. We already have plenty of those. We don't need another one. So CoreOS does a great job right now of just when you install it out of the box, you get this, you know, obviously this minimal container host that's ready to go, ready to take on workloads. And kind of that mindset is what we want to carry forward. So again, this is becoming the upstream to what we're doing on the Red Hat side. Keep the same mission. When we look at the release, we're marching towards getting regular releases out next year. I'm hoping this lands with Fedora 30. We definitely want to keep the same alpha, beta, stable kind of mentality going here. And we are going to be plumbing this into kind of a lot of the CI work that's been going on at Red Hat over the past couple of years, which is something I'm super excited about. And that's a big deal for us. The update model is going to change from the Omaha and update engine side. The successor to Omaha is called Cincinnati. Again, I don't know where the names come from, but some other Midwest city. And so that's actually going to be tweaked a bit to update standalone host. So again, you'll be able to do the same kind of model for CL, where if you want to deploy it in a large cluster or have a standalone nodes that just update themselves, we'll be doing that. From a runtime perspective, I don't actually think we've fleshed out which runtimes are going to be included, but you know, probably these, and I think we'd be open to others. So if other people have ideas or things they want to see, we definitely want to capture that and hear it. So I do want to go back to the whys a little bit here. You guys know the five whys. If you ask somebody reasons for something, they'll never tell you everything at first, right? They'll slowly open up everything. So if you have kids, this is like free parenting advice, like keep asking why. But I think like the main reason we're looking at making some changes is just acknowledging that the ecosystem is quite different now than it was 5 years ago, and hopefully everybody here kind of feels and realizes that. And there are some things we can do at the OS level to make things work better. The community development angle is a big one. That's something that's, you know, obviously super important to us. You know, I think historically, container and Linux seem to be driven by like super smart people, small team, and there definitely was some outside development in the OS, but not all that much. And so this is something where we're hoping to benefit from expanding that. And that's an easy way to actually drive a heck of a lot of value from Fedora itself. And then, of course, that ties down into sustainability, right? It's no good to have an OS and use it for high-value systems if you don't think it's going to be there in 6 months or a year or 10 years, right? So the sustainability side is a big deal for us. And then, again, if we do this right and tweak the right knobs, the potential for growing the user base is huge. And I have 1 minute left, so I got to wrap up. But then, briefly, future opportunities. I don't have much specific to say here, other than there's internal talks about like all kinds of stuff that we can do with just how we version these lower like pieces of the OS and get this going. So we're actually really excited about what this is going to look like 1 to 2 years from now. And so. Actually hoping to come back and kind of do a retrospective maybe with more guys from the team on kind of what this looks like and the results from it. But that's super exciting to me. So I'm going to wrap up, but I guess here's kind of some of those other talks I talked about. We don't have a very good website right now. We'll fix that when we start getting releases and actually do the launch. But we're trying to have all the discussions out on GitHub right now. So definitely encourage you guys, if you're interested in this space, which hopefully you are, please swing by, and we want that feedback and, you know, make sure that we're doing everything we can. All right. So with that, I'm going to stop talking. Thanks for coming.